It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Head of the pack, Holloway, and slam dunk.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome in to finally the beautiful day we've been waiting for in the Sioux Empire. My goodness, again, I will petition for a retractable roof, a garage door, something so I can hear the birds chirping outside on a day like this. It is garage sale season. Kingswood Rummage is out on the west side. I know my family's out and about. Hope yours is as well. Welcome in to the Thursday month ending April 30th edition of Overtime. It is Minnesota Vikings Thursday. Dustin Baker across from me. I said this honestly, wholeheartedly. He's got a get up on today with the old school Vikings block lettering. And I said this as nice as I possibly could. That is my favorite piece of apparel of the ugly Vikings tree, is that block lettering from the 80s, the 90s, early 2000s. I miss that, just like I love the Packers block lettering. Everything else Vikings related, yuck. But we'll dive into the NFC North draft grades, the Minnesota Vikings, how they did in their nine-man draft class. They had three third-round picks. They did trade Jonathan Grenard. That one caught me off guard. Off guard with Grenard. Sounds like a podcast in the future, but Jonathan Grenard moved middle of the draft, and all of a sudden I see the Vikings name pop up again in the third round. I said, gosh, they traded up again. And then I find out that Jonathan Grenard on the way to Philly. We'll break down that trade, a third rounder this year, third rounder next year, later on in the show. All things Vikings all the time, jam-packed into hour number one. Hour two, NBA, NHL chatter. We had a couple exciting series finales in both sports last night, or just one, rather, in the NHL, in the Pennsylvania-based Pittsburgh-Philadelphia series. We'll also talk about our Derby contest for the Kentucky Derby coming up on Saturday. I got a list of all the ponies, all the horses, all 20 of them, including the recent entry whose name is Great White. And we'll do a random number-generated fun contest so you will have a horse in the race if you're one of our first 20 callers today and tomorrow on the show. Big prize pack, as this contest will replace the Friday parlay over the weekend. We'll round out the show with the latest news from the NFL. Cool commentary from Fernando Mendoza. We'll play back for you, as well as the good, the bad, and the ugly. Well, it was good enough last night for the Detroit Pistons. They find a way 116-109 beyond Orlando. That series, a little bit more interesting. Now a 3-2 advantage of the Magic. Cade Cunningham, really darn fantastic. 45 points. But the question is, who is the second best player on the Pistons when they're at their best this year? Here's ESPN's Om Yongmasook.
Oh, I mean, it's got to be Jalen Duren. He was an all-star center this season, averaging 19.5 points, 10 rebounds, I think 65% shooting. When he is at his most physical best inside, owning the glass, owning the paint, scoring on pick and rolls, blocking shots, and intimidating inside, Detroit is at its best. Because then you have the physicality, you have the defense, you have the intimidation, and then you have the ability of somebody helping Cade inside the paint on pick and rolls. You got somebody who's got his back on defense. I've always felt that if Jalen Duren kind of started to show what he did during the regular season, Orlando would be in big trouble.
So that's the take of Om Yongmasook on the win for Detroit, as well as the pecking order of talent there for the Detroit Pistons, who live to fight another day. They're down 3-2 in that series as it shifts back to Orlando. Toronto and Cleveland went at it last night. Cleveland 5 points better in a 125-120 final. Cleveland used a 25-17 fourth quarter margin in the win to take a 3-2 series lead. And then a disappointing night, frankly, for the LA Lakers. 25 points from LeBron James. He was scoreless from downtown, 0-for-6, as Houston finds a way. 99-93, all about the Rockets' defense, according to Kendrick Perkins.
They found their identity on the defensive end, and it started in game three. And this is back-to-back games where they didn't held the Lakers under 100 points. And when you think about the Rockets, the reason, the only thing that was separating them while they down in this series was their IQ, right? And so they have found their niche for as limiting turnovers and getting back to who they are, getting stops and getting out in transition. And what we're seeing now is we're seeing the team play with a high level of confidence and play with some damn pride. They're playing for the name on the front of their jerseys and the names on the back of their jerseys. And so now you got the Rockets headed back into H-Town, going to be in their home crowd, the younger group, the most talented, the more talented group, and now the Lakers back against the wall because I don't think they get game six.
99-93, game six will be in Houston. Evan Cohen noting something about these Rockets that might be a cause for concern, but certainly is interesting. He says flat out that this team might just play better and be better without the likes of Kevin Durant.
As a basketball player, I love Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. right? I think he's way better defensively than other people give him credit for. He's a phenomenal basketball player, one of the great scorers to ever live. So I do not want this to come off as a knock on Kevin Durant. It has to come off as a knock on the Kevin Durant Rockets partnership that they feel last year like they're onto something. And they feel in the last three games like they're onto something.
All right, they might be. 99-93 winner for Houston last night. Lakers still hold a 3-2 lead in that series. Tonight in the NBA, Knicks at the Hawks, 6 o'clock on ESPN. New York looking to close that series out on the road. They're a 2.5-point favorite. Celtics at Sixers, same deal for Boston. Possible road closeout tonight, 7 o'clock on NBC Sports Network. Boston favored by 6.5 points. And then the series that we touted coming in. This is the must-see series of the first round of the NBA postseason. And then Minnesota gets dealt with a very unfortunate injury situation. They still lead the series 3-2. Home to the Nuggets tonight, 8:30 on ESPN. But Vegas thinks, and the general public a little wary about the chances of Minnesota to close this thing out tonight or at all. Denver favored by 5.5 points on the road. In the NHL last night, Montreal took a 3-2 lead in their series against Tampa with a 3-2 road win. And then the series between Pittsburgh and Philly moved to Philly last night and certainly had a storybook ending for the Flyers as they find a way to get the job done in a very, very low-scoring contest.
York to Michkov. Michkov back to York. York Arista. Cam York from distance. And the Flyers are on their way to the second round.
Unbelievable crowd pop as always, as it's Philly better than Pittsburgh for the first time in a very long time on the ice, and certainly a massive moment for the Flyers. They win the series 4-2. Elsewhere, it was Vegas over Utah 5-4. Back to Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby talking about the team just not having what it takes in the first round series.
We had some really good looks. We're a shot away from going back to Pittsburgh for game 7. So, you know, it just comes down to bounces sometimes. But putting yourself in that position is tough, but I think we all had a lot of belief that we could dig ourselves out of it. And, you know, I think our game showed that. It's just unfortunate that we got behind early in the series.
And that's Sidney Crosby again in the latter game last night. Vegas in double overtime with a shorthanded goal to win it and extend the series. They still trail it. Vegas takes a 3-2 lead. Tonight in the NHL, Stars in the Wild from St. Paul, 6:30 on TNT. Minnesota with a closeout opportunity. Vegas has their money line odds at -120 this morning. Oilers and the Ducks, 9 o'clock on TNT from Anaheim. Anaheim leads 3-2. Edmonton favored for a road win tonight, -130. On that money line into the NFL, draft in the rear view, rookie mini camp ahead. Vikings will host their mini camp for the rookies on the 8th and 9th of May. Packers begin tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, rookie mini camp. Courtney Cronin talking about Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. He says, I just thought it would be different this offseason.
We need to get a move on here because we said things were going to be different this time around. They're clearly not. We don't want to sign up for this again going through this offseason process. We're trying to get this done sooner than minicamp, but a couple of weeks? You're basically like saying we want to do things differently, but we're okay playing it out the exact same way that it went out last year. Because you give this guy a couple weeks, he's taking it up to the 11th hour, just like he did in 25.
That's Courtney Cronin. Again, I feel like a fool. I was thinking that with McCarthy's commentary when he got hired, Aaron Rodgers would return the favor and say, Big Mike, I'm so excited. I can't wait. I'm in attendance at your presser. I'll commit to the team in a couple of weeks. And then I'm going to kick it up. I'm going to take it easy this offseason. I'm a veteran, tried and true. But I'm going to be a member of the Pittsburgh Steelers. We have yet to get any announcement to confirm that. We've got our suspicions that it's likely, but we haven't gotten the confirmation yet from Aaron Rodgers. Somehow that quarterback situation in Pittsburgh, which features Mason Rudolph, Will Howard, Drew Aller, pales in comparison to the crap going on in Cleveland. As always at the quarterback position, they are considering Deshaun Watson as the team starter week one. Here's Matt Fontana of ESPN Radio.
You have a quarterback that is already paid. There is none of that money they can get back. He is counting against the salary cap. It doesn't behoove the team to cut him. No one is clearly going to trade for him. He is here, and we might not have a better option. Like, it's that simple. And I think the part that I saved for the last there, that is the one that people are maybe having the hardest time to grasp is, and it's the truth, there might not be a better option. I'd love for Shador Sanders or Dillon Gabriel to be a better option. They're not. There really aren't.
I don't know how you can say that definitively. Dillon Gabriel, probably. You saw a lot more of him last year. Shador Sanders was fine last season. But how are those two guys on a bad football team with a lot of unknowns and potential room for growth worse than a guy that wasn't good before he tore his Achilles two times? Deshaun Watson has been just north of nothing since joining the Cleveland Browns on the football field, much less all of his off-the-field issues. The fact that they're even considering pivoting to him, that he's even still on the roster and playing, and they're talking him up to the media, is all the things that are wrong with Cleveland's pro sports. And right now, that continues in a wild quarterback room in Cleveland. Yesterday, Minnesota played pretty darn well. Not good enough as Seattle sweeps them in a 5-3 victory. Minnesota 13-18 on the year. Eric Orsi in the bullpen taking his first loss of the season. Other AL Central finals. White Sox win in extras against the Angels 3-2. Cleveland over Tampa 3-1. Guardians are 16-16. Lastly, Detroit losing in Atlanta 4-3. And the White Sox yesterday did win over Angels. Already got to that one. Today and tonight, Blue Jays at Twins. 6:40 is the start time. 6 o'clock, your pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Let's hop across the table. It's Minnesota Vikings Thursday, a busy day as we break down the 9-man draft class of the Minnesota Vikings here thoroughly in just a moment. Dustin Baker with us, my friend. How you doing this week?
I'm a little depressed today because of the Lakers series. Mm-hmm. On cloud nine after they went up 3-0, and now that they've lost the last two, you have that paranoia sinking in that they're going to be the first team ever mm-hmm. in NBA history to lose a 3-0 lead. And it makes it so that Friday and then possibly Sunday aren't fun viewing experiences. Like, you're just hoping not to lose. And normally, that should be the opposite. You're watching these things for enjoyment. So it's a case study on having your team go up big and then squandering a lead. If you would have told me a week and a half ago the Lakers would be up 3-2 on the Rockets, I'd be ecstatic. But not when it comes at the cost of losing two straight and then jeopardizing, you know, that 3-0 lead.
And certainly it's a lot of the twists and the turns of the postseasons that have series involved, like the NHL, Major League Baseball, NBA. What kind of confidence do you have right now? If you were to rate it, okay, 60%, a lot of percentages still favor the Lakers, obviously, mm-hmm. historically. What percentage chance do you think they get out of this series with a win?
I think the ultimate, I would say 70% chance mm-hmm. that they aren't the only team in NBA history to collapse from 3-0. The way that I look at it is Luke Kennard has not had a good game since about game one or game two. I mean, he's been awful in the last two games. And I think he's overdue to have, like, with Austin Reeves back, and he played pretty decently last night, and we know LeBron's going to be LeBron. They need one more guy, and that's usually what Luka would be, and then some. They need one more guy to contribute and get buckets. And I think that'll be Kennard. If not, Marcus Smart has played a big role. I really don't want LeBron to be the first guy this ever happens to. And I don't think it will, because at the end of the day, the Lakers would have to lose four straight games to a Kevin Durant-less Rockets team. And if you take a step back, that probably won't happen. If it does happen, we're looking at the prospect of LeBron James retiring after becoming the first player ever to see his team lose a 3-0 lead. Oh, it's anxiety. I don't care for it.
And certainly that would feel like a Dan Marino-style ending. I can't remember the exact score. I know that his team had 7. Jacksonville had north of 50. I think it was maybe 62-7 early playoffs. It was the Jaguars and Mark Brunell over the Dolphins and Dan Marino. Just saw up there on Pat McAfee's show, highest NBA postseason ratings so far at this stage in 33 years. Really? Feels like there's a lot of buzz, a lot of entertainment in round one, and a lot of good series going on.
Yeah, it's weird, though. Like, I don't disagree that that stat is correct, but it's strange because we talked on this show, 2 weeks ago, that the only real series that would put butts in seats for competition would be Nuggets and Wolves. Like, the other ones were good, but none of them were like, okay, that one's must-see television. So it must be the Wemby factor. Maybe it's LeBron farewell tour. But yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Harkening back to that Dan Marino, it was 62-7 in that final one, that game, 1999 AFC Divisional. And I hope that's not the case with LeBron James and the Lakers. Let's talk draft, my friend, a 9-member class. We'll break it down pick by pick, talk about the players that were available, missed opportunities, what you would have loved to see versus like to see. How is the draft class settling in with you? It always takes a little bit of time to fall in love unless you're team just knocks everything out of the park, which we can debate, but I don't think Minnesota necessarily knocked it out of the park here. But how is it settling with you this week, almost a week removed from this thing going final on Saturday?
I've settled just fine with it. I think what happens, unless you're the Eagles, that fan base, if your team doesn't follow the consensus big board that you have monitored as a football fan, then you don't think they're doing well. Caleb Banks, with his foot injury, was firmly a second-round pick on draft night. In January, he was firmly a first-round pick. When he broke a bone in his foot, that, you know, thrusted his draft stock down into round two. So I will admit, like I said on Friday over the phone to you, I was shocked that it was Caleb Banks because I didn't have any intel that was going to be it. I was buying into the fact it would be a defensive tackle. I got that part right. But I do like the fact the Vikings are willing to gamble a little bit. Last year, they went safe with Donovan Jackson. Usually guards are, you know, kind of boring in general, and then drafting one is not really complicated science. Drafting a defensive tackle who has a nose tackle size, but also, you know, can get after the quarterback is, you know, it's really risky business if that guy has a bad foot. But I support it wholeheartedly because I think he could be a game changer. And then the rest of the draft, I enjoyed how it played out. Even though the Vikings don't have, like, defensive problems, you know, they ranked third best in the NFL last year, DVOA and EPA next to the Seahawks and Texans. It was the first time in Vikings history that they have spent 4 draft picks on defensive players in the first 3 rounds.
If there was a moment between Thursday, Friday, and Saturday that you were watching the TV, you had the pick up, the pick is in, Minnesota Vikings, and you were screaming at your TV, gotta be this guy,
yeah,
gotta be this guy, gotta be this guy, and it didn't happen, what was that moment for you? Was it a running back in the middle of rounds, or what comes to mind?
Well, no, I'm cynical now. Now it's a running joke. Like, they're not going to take a running back, are they? And that's what I was saying to my wife every 5 minutes during the draft. I don't know if she was listening and she was reading a book. We'll pretend that she was.
I can tell you she wasn't listening.
So my screaming at the television moment, I think was probably applicable to at least a dozen football teams, was Emmanuel McNeil Warren in round 2. We projected him, you know, you, me, and I think the consensus big boards, that he would go somewhere in round 1, if not early on Friday night. But I think he ended up falling to 48 or 49 or something. And seeing as how we don't know if Harrison Smith is coming back, you had the safety void. Like, you had this opportunity where if you had taken EMW and you had the folks who were still upset about the Banks pick, the fans just say, well, just in your mind, just transpose them. Pretend you got EMW in the first round and then Caleb Banks is the second rounder. So I thought Emmanuel McNeil Warren was a no-brainer for any team to get, and especially a team that needs a safety that also has significant input from Brian Flores.
So certainly a lot up in the air for that Minnesota Vikings draft. I do think they did a good job addressing needs. I told you off air, I was talking to Thor on this show on Friday of last week, and debating about the Banks pick. Hey, it wasn't the greatest value pick. And I asked him, I said, this guy's a 3 technique. We'll play between the guard and the tackle generally in college. I don't know if he's going to be the Vikings nose. I don't know who's going to play nose tackle because Jalen Redmond doesn't really play a 1 tech either. And then they come and address it with Dominique Orange in round number 3. So the Vikings defensive line now, you could argue, big strength of the team, especially if you include the edge rushers. We'll dive in pick by pick here in just a moment. Also, the draft grades are out. And my favorite thing about draft grades is they're not reliable. But there's one thing that one particular person on the internet likes to do. Renee Bugner aggregates all of the draft grades from the draft heads from around the NFL. We'll tell you where the Vikings, the other NFC North teams rounded out. Vikings draft grade, not great. But we'll debate it. We'll talk about the ceiling and the floor, the needs that were met, the needs that are still out there, and a pick-by-pick breakdown. We'll go rounds 1 through 4, 1 through 3 for Minnesota first, and then the rest of the draft coming up at the end of hour number one. You're locked and loaded. It's Minnesota Vikings Thursday, and it continues right after this on your Sioux Falls sports leader. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
Overtime is in the middle of your workday. Unwrap your sandwich and get caught up with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Just getting off the ground on this Minnesota Vikings Thursday month-ending edition of Overtime. It is April the 30th. We'll have our Kentucky Derby contest announcement and first enrollees coming up at hour number two around 12:20-ish. So stay tuned for that. Get in on the action for the 152nd running. And then they're off at the Kentucky Derby coming up in hour number two. Let's talk about the Minnesota Vikings draft class. Before we go there, though, the NFC North, give me your take about the Packers, the Lions, and the Bears draft classes. If you have grades, let them rip. If you have some commentary, some critique, some praise, let that go as well. As long as it is praising the Packers, that would be nice. Go for it.
I'm going to do that, and it sucks. I'll start at the bottom. I have the Lions at a B-, mainly because they didn't have a third rounder, and then the guy that they drafted at round two, Derek Moore, was a consensus big board third rounder. So I thought that was a little bit of a reach, and I should know about reaches because I'm a Vikings fan and there's Caleb Banks. So I had the Lions at a B-. I had the Vikings at a B, probably a spoiler alert for our next breakdown, but I'll go through the picks for the Vikings in that spot. The Vikings did not come away with a wide receiver or running back, and I wanted them to get probably both. They did not. Nevertheless, a B feels fair. The Bears get a B-plus because of, let's see, Dylan Thienemann. I know a lot about that guy because everybody thought he was going to be a Viking, so I had to do my homework extensively before the draft. Logan Jones creates an interesting camp battle between Garrett Bradbury and himself at center. Logan Jones is 25. It'd be really weird to draft a 25-year-old center and not play him, so Garrett Bradbury could be available for trade. And then Malik Thomas in the later rounds for the Bears. I liked him. I was hoping the Vikings might snag him. And then I think I am an outsider or a contrarian, Bert, because when I look at the draft, I factor in everything. So the fact that the Packers spent their first rounder on Micah Parsons, I think, is an undisputable dub. So I have the Packers at an A-. They didn't have the first round pick, but they have Micah Parsons. How do you say Sissy's last name?
Cisse.
Okay, Brandon Cisse. He's going to be fun for the Packers. DDS, is it Danny Dennis Sutton?
Danae,
is it really?
There you go, yeah. Danae,
right,
Dennis
so,
Sutton.
I think everybody that writes at Vikings territory had him in their Vikings mock.
Excuse me, Danae. I'm figuring it out, too.
Vikings
Danae.
Writers and fans had their eyes on Danae, especially after Jonathan Grenard got traded, and of course he landed with the Packers. And then I did some late Friday night homework on who the Vikings should target on Saturday, and one of them was Damani Jackson. Mm-hmm. Lo and behold, he goes to the Packers. So I have the Packers at an A-.
I absolutely love that. I don't have the Packers maybe that high. I'd say BB+, especially you get half of Micah Parsons. You got a first rounder to give away next year to Dallas as well. So going in, what they had versus what they got, I liked. I said on the air on Monday, never going to be a real big fan of taking a kicker, taking specialists, much less trading up for a specialist. But it appears the Packers got a good one in Trey Smack the Third out of Florida. So that rounds out the Packers class, their draft grades. Let's look at the overall draft grades, how they came out according to Renee Bugner. Does a great job of aggregating, putting together, averaging out 20, 25 different opinions here from notable people, including the likes of Mel Kiper Jr. and more. Cleveland, your top team. Vegas, the Giants, the Jets, the Cowboys in the top five. The top team that didn't have the number one overall pick or two first rounders is Tampa, and tied for fifth with Dallas in the division. It looks like the Bears slot in at number 20, Packers 21, Lions great at 16th, and Minnesota down there at 29. I feel like that's a little low for Minnesota, but what is your personal draft grade for your Minnesota Vikings?
All right, I have them at a B, mainly because with Caleb Banks, it's the same thing I said last year. Like on Thursday night, I felt the exact same way as I did last year about Donovan Jackson. Where I was like, you know what? I like this pick, but you probably could have got him tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any way to dispute that. And then we saw the familiar reporting that said that there were several teams in the 20s
always out there.
Yeah, so if that's true, then I get it. And Caleb Banks has the potential to be fantastic as early as this September. It's all whether, you know, his foot's going to be ready. And I'm going to say that this Vikings squad, as constructed, its front office, its ownership, its coach, they knew that they had to nail this draft class. So for them to go willy-nilly and, you know, not really do their homework on his medicals, I can absolutely guarantee you that they scouted this, you know, leg, this foot of Caleb Banks through and through to make sure that that is going to be good to go. Because this is one of the teams in the NFL that cannot afford to have a bad draft class. So that gives me encouragement that Banks is going to be good. I think overall, we can go through these one by one if you want.
Yep.
My favorite pick was Dominic Orange, Big Citrus. And the reason is he's just kind of a pepperoni pizza selection. Like if you order pizza for your family or a group of friends, you're never going to go wrong with pepperoni pizza. And it's pretty easy to draft nose tackles. Like, you don't have to have huge expectations that they're going to rush the passer. That's not really their job. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be big and there and stuff running backs. And I know that Dominic Orange can do that. So the fact that they drafted him, and we haven't had one of those since, my goodness. Like, we've had variations with Dalvin Tomlinson, who was built like a nose tackle, but they played him kind of to the other side. We haven't had a nose tackle since Linval Joseph. Yeah. So now we get to go back to that era in addition to having Caleb Banks next to him. You could see in plain view that Brian Flores is prioritizing the front of the Vikings defense because we went another draft where cornerbacks and safeties were just disregarded in the first two rounds.
Let's go pick by pick. We spent a lot of time on Banks, so we're going to dive into the first pick beyond Banks. That was Cincinnati linebacker, another Cincinnati inside linebacker in Jake Golday. Maybe not the best pick for where they are right now, but there's a lot to like on tape for Golday. It's just the reason I say that is Eric Wilson got re-signed this offseason. Mm-hmm. You already have Blake Cashman. Ivan Pace Jr. is back on the roster, so it wasn't a burning need at off-ball linebacker for Minnesota. But what do you like about Jake Golday in the pick in round two?
If I can get over my resentment that they passed on Emmanuel McNeil Warren, I am totally fine with this pick. I don't care that they have a deep off-ball linebacking room because eventually they won't.
Yep.
If you go back, if you're bored sometime, go back at past drafts and look at players that your team could have selected and then try to think to yourself, oh, they really didn't need an edge rusher. They didn't need a wide receiver. You always end up wanting the guy who's good 2 years later because the roster's changed so much. So Golladay is going to be fun. It sounds like he's a little raw right now. The Vikings haven't drafted an off-ball linebacker in round one or two since 2015 with Eric Kendricks. So I think this works out beautifully because we know Eric Wilson is 32. He's not going to be a stud for, you know, three more seasons, I don't think. Blake Cashman is guaranteed to miss 3 or 4 games per year. That's just what he does. So when either of those things happen, we don't have to go sign some journeyman veteran that's good at tackling. You'll have Golday there in addition to Ivan Pace. So I really enjoyed that pick.
We spent some time on Dominic Orange, a.k.a. Big Citrus, elite nickname, pretty darn elite nose tackle. That's where they got him right now, our lads on the depth chart for Minnesota. Let's move on from him to Caleb Tiernan, Northwestern tackle. There's some buzz maybe that he could play guard as well, but feels like a tackle, Northwestern guy. What do you like about Tiernan and the back end of round three?
Well, if he's going to play guard, he's going to be a huge guard at 6'8 and 300-something. The Tiernan pick is fascinating because it can either be an omen that Christian Darrisaw's ACL is still problematic. I don't think that's the case, but maybe. Brian O'Neill is scheduled to hit free agency next year.
Yeah, and he's an older guy, too.
Yep. And otherwise, it can be insurance for both of those things, or it can be a certified best player available pick. In any event, this is wise. This is what the Eagles do. I think the Packers do this. They draft offensive linemen and stash them for
every
year.
Yep. Every year.
Yep. And then when you get to the following offseason, you're not, you don't have to scour like Spotrac or PFF to figure out which guard you can get. So I like this. This is kind of a change of pace for the Vikings. Now, if it turns out that Darrisaw's ACL is problematic, then I'll be a little bit more apprehensive, like, because that will be doomsday when it comes to the finances. But you can never get mad when your team builds the trenches, and I liked this pick.
Lastly, for this segment, I want you to break down the trade that landed them. It was this pick that they got in the trade,
yes,
correct? 34 overall, the round number 3. They take Jacoby Thomas, a safety out of Miami. Fans immediately see safety. They say, there's our Harrison Smith replacement. I'm not so sure on that based on the overall draft analysis of Thomas. Appears more of a box safety. Harrison Smith has played all over the field, but also is that traditional back-end kind of guy. What do you like about the trade? Talk to us about the value you get from Philly in the trade for next year as well. But then also dive into your analysis of Jacoby Thomas, safety out of the U of Miami.
I don't really like the trade because, in my estimation, Jonathan Greenard was the second best football player on the Vikings. And if you want to be a serious contender, you don't ship edge rushers away. You hoard them, you obtain them, and retain them. But the Vikings insist that they had the big spending spree last year and there had to be cut somewhere, which I don't really understand because how is the salary cap so bad when your quarterback makes $1.3 million? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't reconcile how they're in cap problems. But if you want to figure out a way to say, okay, I understand this Jonathan Greenard trade, if you gave him the contract that Philadelphia did, 4 years, $100 million, which probably is cheap for Jonathan Greenard, like by today's standard. You are admitting that Dallas Turner A wasn't worth it, and the trade to get Dallas Turner sure as hell wasn't worth it because that cost a miniature king's ransom. So this should be a tip of the cap that Dallas Turner is full systems go. This may have been the plan all along when they drafted Dallas Turner. All right, we'll get two or three good years out of Greenard, and then we'll roll there. For the fundamental fact that you shouldn't trade good edge rushers, I would have hopefully found a way to keep Greenard. But next year, they'll have a third rounder. If that's the Eagles pick, that'll probably be somewhere between 80 and 96, so it won't be absolutely delightful. Thomas, I don't think, is a one-for-one replacement for Harrison Smith. I think that's actually what Dylan Tynemann would have been. But that doesn't mean that he can't work inside Brian Flores' defense. You saw the fingerprints of Brian Flores all over this draft class. So between Josh Metellus, Jay Ward, Theo Jackson, Jacoby Thomas, the Vikings have a lot of safeties to choose from. And I think Thomas will play sooner rather than later. And then we'll just wait to see next year what they get with the final shoot. The other thing is, if they end up signing Juwan Jennings, they freed up the salary cap to be able to do that. So there's some unique takes that say, hey, this was really a trade for two third-rounders plus Juwan Jennings.
Juwan Jennings visiting on Tuesday night into yesterday. Don't know if we've heard anything just yet on that. Before we dive into the break and come back and break down the final four picks and the UDFA class, the GM opening and the search is apparently open as of yesterday. Will Family releasing a statement, and Rob Brzezinski's thrown his hat into the ring saying, I would like to be the full-time guy. Would you like him to be the full-time guy? And is there anybody else out there, names that you're hearing and wanting to lead the Minnesota Vikings at GM moving forward?
I want the notorious BRZ to be the Vikings general manager, and it's for an unconventional reason. Normally, when you change the head coach and general manager, it is a package deal. And the Vikings opted not to do that. They, to me, made Kevin O'Connell accountable and, you know, in power as the team's CEO. So when you hire a general manager, that man or woman's first task is to hire a head coach. If they hire an outsider right now, they're going to hamstring that person right away and say, well, you can't do the most important part of your job. Because we already have Kevin O'Connell. So we want you to just get along with him and then mostly do what he says. If that's what you want, you already have Rob Brzezinski. Brzezinski's been with the Vikings for 27 years. He's seen some things. I don't think he had any major blunders in the last 3 months. He got Kyler Murray on this team, onboarded what I think is a promising draft class. So because the Vikings decided to fire the general manager but not their head coach, the best way to see this thing out is giving O'Connell the power that you have already given him. Let him ride that out. if this season goes poorly, 6-11, 5-12, some crap like that, then you can fire O'Connell, put Brzezinski back in his capologist job, and start a genuine search for a new head coach and general manager. So I would keep it as is, mainly because of Brzezinski's experience, and then let O'Connell, let him sleep in the bed that he's made. He's the guy that survived, and Adafa Mensah did not.
That's the latest for the Minnesota Vikings. That news of the GM opening being official went down yesterday. Rob Brzezinski news as of this morning. Pro Football Talk, the first place that I got that news. The undrafted free agency whip around time has been pretty darn big for the Minnesota Vikings in the Kwesi Adofa-Mensah era. But now into the Rob Brzezinski era, interim for now. How did the Vikings do in UDFA land? We'll also break down the final four picks that the Vikings made, rounds 5, 6, and 7. Max Bredesen, Charles Demings, Damon Claiborne, and Gavin Gerhardt. Breaking those down. So much more as we continue Vikings Thursday next on Overtime.
You want more of Overtime? It's all on the podcast. Free with the app or online at ESPN Sioux Falls. Overtime with Burt Rameen on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you, set to wrap up this Thursday edition of Overtime, hour number one. Still a full hour ahead coming up. NBA, NHL talk, Derby contest for the weekend. 152nd running of the Kentucky Derby. That gets announced in our first entrance coming up around 12:30 in hour number two. Latest from the NFL, good, the bad, the ugly, still to come. Still to come this hour. Minnesota Vikings draft recap continues. Rounds 5 through 7. We'll start with Michigan tight end, fullback, split back, H-back. What the heck is Max Bredesen to the Minnesota Vikings in the fifth round?
Well, Bredesen is J.J. McCarthy's former teammate. Thank you very much. Besties, almost. Bredesen's going to be a fullback. So C.J. Ham retired about a month ago, 6 weeks ago, and this is his direct replacement. When I first saw this, I was like, really, we're drafting a tight end? But it didn't take long to look at the tape and the scouting report and realize he's a fullback. This is another pepperoni pizza pick. Although I don't know if drafting fullbacks in round 5 is the smartest decision. But I don't think anybody's going to be mad about this because he's probably going to be a lovable dude. He's going to do the dirty work like CJ Ham did. And you saw, I think we're going to continue to see this shift in the NFL. All of these tight ends, these tight end heavy sets. I think you're going to see more running the football. I think we're seeing the pendulum swing back. So I don't have any problem with this pick. Charles Demings came in round 5 as well.
Probably my favorite pick.
I have this theory. The Vikings have not connected on a rookie cornerback in the draft to the tune of a second contract since Xavier Rhodes, and that was 2013. A couple of them have died, Kyrie Jackson and Jeff Gladney. A couple of them have really sucked. So based on sheer probability, math, a cornerback for the Vikings has to be good that they draft. I think that might be Demings. Probably the most fascinating pick. Anytime a running back is taken in the late round, there is value attached because this guy has the upside to touch the ball 20 to 30 times per game on offense. So with Damon Claiborne, he has 4.37 speed. He's the same size as Devon Achane in Miami. And then wouldn't you know it, Devon Achane's offensive coordinator from the last 4 years is now the Vikings assistant coach. So we have this utopian vision where, hey, maybe he's doing it again, Frank Smith, and Claiborne is going to be our stud. The only problem with him is usually guys with his size, like 5'10", 190 pounds, 185 pounds, they usually don't profile as workhorse RB1s. Therefore, on a roster with Aaron Jones and Jordan Mason, we don't know if Claiborne's going to get an extensive look this year, hopefully, because the Vikings need an injection of youth at running back. But I like this pick because it showed they at least cared a little bit about getting young at running back. And then finally, before we get to UDFAs, the Vikings waited until round 7 to get a center, a guy named Gavin Gerhardt, who you'd be hard-pressed to even find a scouting report on because he was such a deep sleeper. They evidently identified him in this draft process, and then they were just done. They knew they could get him in round 7. There's some sort of connection in this Vikings scouting system that loves players from the University of Cincinnati, and I want to get to the bottom of it. This pick is important because, for now, Blake Brandel is on tap to be the starting center. but he's played tackle, he's played guard, and usually guys that are 28, 29 years old don't just wake up and decide they're going to play center in the NFL. Usually that transformation happens in their mid-20s. So Gerhardt, in theory, if Brandel gets hurt, isn't any good, he and Michael Juergens would probably be the next men up on this roster.
So certainly the Vikings did a really good job, especially later in the draft, of addressing their keynote needs, safety, fullback, cornerback depth. Running back was a massive need. And then center, of course, I think Minnesota, really the confidence kind of grew in, okay, I like this draft class, the later on it went.
Yeah, for sure. And then for the UDFA part of it, the Vikings got a new punter.
Mm-hmm. And a Ray Guy Award winner.
Yeah, this guy is from Australia, and he's important to me. His name is Brett Thorson, and the reason that is important to me is because I spent the first 18 years of my life named Dustin Thorson. My mom's maiden name is Kay Thorson. Hi, Mom. So I've never seen a Thorson in the NFL, let alone sports. I think there was that one dude from the Eagles. There was a quarterback that was coming out from somewhere a few years ago. I'll have to figure out what his name was.
Yeah, I think it's Clayton Thorson.
That's him. Yep.
Okay,
for the Norwegian namesake, Brett Thorson, even though he's from Australia, I don't know how that Norski ended up in Australia. He's the Vikings rookie punter, and he'll have a competition this summer against Johnny Hecker. And this isn't just some, you know, fringe punter you'd sign. This guy is one of the best in the nation. So for my namesake, it'd be really cool to have the Vikings punter last name Thorson for the next 4 to 10 years. Two other UDFAs I want to call out. For those that like this process, Dylan Bell from Georgia, there's been some folks that have chirped that he can be the real deal. He's not a real pure wide receiver. He's more like a Deebo Samuel type, where you can use him as a gadget. He's from University of Georgia. Kirby Smart has talked really highly of him. He's a Viking. And then Cameron Stewart is an older edge rusher. A lot of times these UDFAs don't get drafted because they're 25 or so. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the case for Cameron Stewart. He came from Temple. He has the measurables and the scouting report to be a beast, but we say that every year, whether it's Bo Richter, Tyler Batty, there's always an exciting edge, Luigi Villane. Mm-hmm. This team needs an edge to stand out, so I will call out Cameron Stewart as another one who could make the Vikings 53-man roster at the end of August.
Let's leave it with this for hour number one. Packers post-draft, the big needs are backup quarterback. Who the heck is it, and how good are they going to be? Backup running back, is Marshawn Lloyd going to be healthy for the first time in his career, or where do they go there? Backup tight end, that's also a big need for Green Bay. As you emerge from undrafted free agency in the NFL draft, to me, one of the needs is edge rusher depth after you say so long to Jonathan Grenard. What other holes, whether it be depth or immediacy, starting holes in the Minnesota Vikings remain right now?
Okay, there are two, and you've already identified one of them. The first one could be addressed, you know, by the time we go to bed. That one is WR3. The Vikings can either roll with Ty Felton, who is either misunderstood because he hardly played last year, and the Vikings went out of their way not to play him by trading for Adam Thielen. Maybe they just knew they were going to redshirt him, and he's the next big thing. Who knows? They are meeting met last night with Juwan Jennings, but if Jennings doesn't sign a contract, the Vikings can't afford him, and then Felton isn't the solution. They're going to need somebody from free agency, whether it's Tyreek Hill, if he's healthy, Stephon Diggs, if he beats the strangulation allegations, Brandon Ayuk eventually might be released, DeAndre Hopkins, point blank, said he wanted to play for the Vikings. So there's several options here. It's just that they're eventually going to have to get one. Hopefully it's as simple as Jennings. And then I think the other one glaringly is edge rusher. It's been a long time since I've said the Vikings need edge rushers, a really long time. And if things go as they are right now, that'll probably be the top draft need next year is an edge rusher. But from free agency, based on the coaches that are already on the Vikings staff, there are guys they can sign: Joey Bosa, Von Miller, A.J. Epinesa, Kyle Van Noy, Leonard Floyd, Cameron Jordan, Marcus Davenport. All of those guys have
Vikings legend, Marcus Davenport.
Yeah, all of those guys have played under current Vikings defensive coaches in some capacity. So I will lift up WR3 and edge rusher, and truth be told, that's really about it. Unless they have some really sexy trade up their sleeve for like Devon Achane, or they want to get a young running back like Trey Benson who could come in now that he's buried on the Cardinals depth chart. This spring and summer will be spent monitoring how deep edge and WR3 can get.
Last week on the show, we talked about offensive line depth. I think the Vikings did a good job. Caleb Tiernan, Gavin Gerhardt in the draft. Also, of course, Ryan Vandermark signed on an offer sheet this offseason. I agree. If you look at the edge rusher second string, it is Tyler Batty, last year undrafted free agent. Bo Richter out of Air Force 2 years ago, undrafted free agent. So I'm not prognosticating anything, but in the recent injury history between Grenard, Van Ginkle, Turner, I don't really know if he's had anything big pop up injury-wise. But you get a feeling that one of those guys might miss some time, few plays here and there. Who is the go-to third guy right now? Is there a preference towards Batty or Richter, or is it somebody else at edge rusher in your eyes?
Oh, I think it would be, first of all, it'd be Van Ginkle, who got hurt. He's the one that, I don't know if you call him injury prone, but he got hurt last year.
Neck injury.
Yeah,
for a while.
And those are never fun, as you know. So I would say Richter would be the guy that tapped on the shoulder. And that's because he's the one that played the most snaps if you wanted to consider it an OLB4 spot. Hilariously, Tyler Batty. So you know how teams have tried to solve the tush-push? Tyler Batty's first NFL snap, I'm not kidding, was the submarine underneath the tush-push.
Sideways? There we go.
That was the very first time he played football. I think other than leave it to chance, with Bo Richter, Tyler Batty, or Cameron Stewart, it probably makes sense to go out and get somebody like Joey Bosa or Jadeveon Clowney. He doesn't have any ties to the Vikings' current coaches, but that guy played like 350 snaps last year in Dallas and had 8.5 sacks. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most fascinating debates about whether or not the first overall pick was a bust. He wasn't a bust, but he wasn't the best player in that draft. So if I had my way, the Vikings would sign Jadeveon Clowney today, and then you could put OLB3 to bed.
Tyler Batty, that story, hysterical. Very, very false, close to home to me. Go out there and get in the way, son. It sounds like something my church league rec basketball coach said. All right, you can't shoot. You can't dribble. You can barely walk in a straight line, Bert. Get out there and get in the way, son. Do your part for the church league basketball team. That's Vikings Thursday, rounding out the month of April, 30th on the show. Dustin Baker, always a blast to have you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Dustin Baker in studio with us again next week. We'll be on the air a little earlier next week, 10 a.m. with Vikings Thursday, 10 to 11 with Dustin Baker. We'll take a break, come back, hour number two, headlines, highlights, NBA, NHL, whip around, and our Kentucky Derby and the Rough contest gets going in hour number two. Stick around, it's overtime on a Thursday. It continues next right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.